This is the state of things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao, in for Frank Stacio. Greg Murphy will represent the GOP in this fall's special election for the 3rd Congressional District. He beat challenger and fellow Dr. Joan Perry, taking home 60% of the vote in yesterday's runoff. Outside groups poured money into this race, and many watched closely to see how this battle of the sexes played out for the Republican Party. WUNC Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff DeBeery followed the results, and he joins me now. Welcome back, Jeff.
Hi, Anita.
So the special election was to fill the seat vacated by Walter Jones, a Republican who'd held it for more than 20 years. Remind us a bit about the primary and what's been going on in this 3rd district.
Sure. So this district itself stretches from the Virginia border, northeastern part of the state, down toward Camp Lejeune, encompassing both the Outer Banks to the east and Greenville to the west. It's a big, sprawling district. It includes parts or all of 17 counties. There are 100 in the state. So pretty a sizable. It's the biggest geographic district in the state. So Walter Jones, as you mentioned, 13-term congressman, passed away back in February, thus creating the opening. So this is effectively an open seat. It was an open primary. There were 17 Republican candidates in this conservative-leaning district. And the top two finishers from that first primary moved on to the runoff, as you mentioned last night. The reason there was a runoff is because neither of them or nobody met that threshold of 30% of the vote. So Greg Murphy, who is in his 3rd term here at the State House, bettered Joan Perry, who was a political newcomer. They're both doctors, for whatever that's worth. So he moves on now to the general election, where he faces a Democrat named Alan Thomas, who, like Murphy, is from Pitt County. Thomas is was a three-term mayor of Greenville, former mayor. So he has some name recognition, but it's very important to preface it all with this is a district that President Trump won in 2016 by 24 points. So Murphy is the prohibitive favorite at this point.
Okay, so that election will be in September. But talking about the runoff, there was a lot of talk about this being a battle of the sexes. I think that was even the New York Times headline in their analysis of this race. Talk a bit about kind of what people were watching, why this was significant for kind of bigwigs in the Republican Party.
Yeah, so there are a number of things to touch on. It is interesting, and I'll share this with you, pulling back the curtain a little bit. I was talking to a reporter today who's a member of the Capitol Press Corps, who I work with down here at the legislature, and he and I were just noting that in conversations we've had with the candidates and also in following along this race, we didn't hear as much about gender from them, Perry and Murphy, as we did from some of those national outlets. The New York Times, the Politico weighed in. They had a piece that was talking about the gender dynamics here. So it is interesting, kind of the different perspectives that you get from both the local folks and some of the national folks. But there certainly was an undercurrent of gender here. Part of that were some of the endorsements that came in. Sarah Palin backed Perry. She was doing robocalls for Perry here. And I think it's worth noting that the 13 Republican women who are currently serving in the U.S. House all backed Perry, the woman who was defeated last night. And I think that's notable for a couple of reasons. One, because all of the women backed Joan Perry. And two, there are only 13 of them. There are 198 Republicans right now in the U.S. House, but just 6.5% of them are women.
So there was also this inaugural effort by this Winning for Women Action Fund that's dedicated to electing Republican women. So it may be something that we see moving into 2020, the effort that Republicans are going to put into trying to get more women to fill those seats.
You know, this is a question that we talked about it a lot last year during the midterms. Women did not do well. Republican women did not do well in federal races, by and large, or in a lot of state house races across the country, including some here in North Carolina. And I was looking at numbers this morning, and it's interesting because as a percentage of the Republicans who are serving in different bodies. I looked at the U.S. House, the U.S. Senate, the State House, the State Senate, and the U.S. House has the smallest percentage of women who are Republicans serving. I don't have a good theory as to why that is, but we know that women can win statewide, are winning statewide. In the U.S. Senate, as a, I guess, a counterexample, there are currently 25 women in the U.S. Senate right now. 8 of them are Republicans. But there has been a push, and we saw it in this race, to elect more women, more Republican women to the U.S. House. But those people backing that, the advocates for that, have not yet found kind of the sweet spot of the groove. So I think it's something we're going to see more of in 2020, and perhaps there will be a new approach.
We'll keep following that with you, Jeff. But now let's move on to the budget. We are in a complicated chess game, to say the least. Give us an overview of kind of where we are and whether or not you think there's a way forward.
There, good question. Loaded question, right? So the budget that the legislature sent to the governor was vetoed. It came back over here. No longer do Republicans have veto-proof majorities. So we're at somewhat of an impasse. For how long? It remains unclear. The governor's main sticking point has been Medicaid expansion. He's been pushing for clean Medicaid expansion. When I say clean, he wants wide Medicaid expansion with no work requirements or no cost to the people who are going to be in the program. And there has just long been resistance for years. We're going back 6 years here. The legislature has had very little, if no interest, in the North Carolina Senate on expanding Medicaid. So they're doing the back and forth right now. They're sending letters publicly, the governor and legislative leaders. And, you know, some of it's grandstanding. I think some of it is trying to push the other side to sit down and give them some more detailed proposals about what it is they want. At the end of the day, we don't have a government shutdown because there was a law that was in place that basically kept the recurring spending levels for recurring appropriation items. It kept it in place moving forward. And there are some other things that they're going to have to deal with piecemeal. There was a stopgap spending measure that begun the process of moving forward earlier today. Ultimately, this is going to be about sacrifice, and it does not appear at this point in early to mid-July that we are anywhere near reaching some sort of significant compromise.
All right, Jeff, we're going to have to leave it there. Jeff Tiberi is WNC's Capital Bureau Chief. You can find more of his reporting at our website. Thanks, Jeff.
You're welcome.